Welcome to the TaxCast, 15 minutes of eye-opening global news and analysis on tax havens and corruption services from the Tax Justice Network, with me, Naomi Fowler. The TaxCast is available to everyone for download and broadcast on www.tackletaxhavens.com. And now for the TaxCast news headlines. In Helsinki, the capital of Finland, companies who use or have links to tax havens will no longer be able to bid for contracts providing goods and services to the public. This month, city councillors voted to sever business ties with such companies. More on that later. The European Union financial transaction tax will go ahead, and it could begin by the end of this year. Economist Richard Murphy of Tax Research UK.
We've got great news this month from Europe. 11 countries, at the least, have committed to introducing a financial transaction tax in Europe. It's vital because it means that banks will be brought under taxation in a way that they're not, and it could be vital for development if they give some of the funding to developing countries.
Most of Europe's financial transactions take place in the City of London, and the British government's refusing to sign up. It seems they'd rather help the city avoid paying its fair share of tax. It's worth pointing out the UK coalition government's Conservative Party receives over half of its funding from the City of London. The coffee shop giant Starbucks hasn't paid tax in the United Kingdom for the last 3 years. Using accounting trickery the Tax Justice Network's warned about for years, they've declared a loss while at the same time telling their investors how profitable its UK business is. Tax Justice Action Group UK Uncuts planning a boycott and some protests at Starbucks stores. More analysis on that later. And if you want to know about how companies use tax havens to cheat the United States out of billions in taxes, the film We're Not Broke is available for screenings. Whichever country you're from, the tricks of the tax-dodging trade apply. If you'd like to host the film or see it, go to www.werenotbrokemovie.com. And here's a taster.
Everything that made America what America is suffering. Plain and simple greed.
If they want to do business here, they have to pay taxes here. That's just how it goes.
ExxonMobil, largest oil company in the world, made $19 billion in profits in 2009, paid no federal income taxes. So if you're working stiff, you're making $30,000, $40,000 a year, you're paying taxes. But if you're Chevron and you made $10 billion in profits in 2009, you don't have to pay any taxes. Citigroup made more than $4 billion in profits, but paid no federal income taxes.
And those are the TaxCast headlines. Now we're going to talk to Richard Murphy for his take on tax justice events this month. Okay, Richard, so this month in the capital of Finland, a very important tax justice victory with the council there, the municipality voting to sever ties with companies using tax havens. So that means no more public contracts for them, no more public money for them. I think they have an annual budget of 4 billion euros. It's quite an important example of what people can do locally, isn't it, to tackle tax havens?
I think it indicates a real direction of travel for the tax justice campaign. We have the opportunity to ask councils all over Europe to begin to look at this. And if they did, then we could work round the problem that central governments seem unwilling to tackle tax havens, but raise the issue locally, put it on the agenda and campaign in that way. And I know that there are councils who want to change their buying policies, who want to put these operations into place. They need information. One of our jobs, we think, in the Tax Justice Network is to try to see how we can help people create the information to make these bans operative, because it's one thing to say you won't buy from a tax haven-related company, but actually another thing to identify who those really are, and we need to provide help there. But if we can do that, then here's a real chance to create change. And I'm really excited by that possibility. Now, there are legal obstacles still to be overcome.
And why might it clash in some way with EU law in terms of what local municipalities do with our money? It's taxpayers' money.
You would think it was perfectly obvious that a local authority could buy in any way they wanted. Unfortunately, the EU has a law that says that any company anywhere has the right to incorporate wherever it wishes and provide service from wherever it wants. And there is the risk of a backlash from large companies against Helsinki and elsewhere to say, no, we're going to take you to court and say that under EU law you're not allowed to do this. Well, I'm not sure that's true, because in the UK we already have law that says from 2013, so it's untested as yet, that local authorities can decide that if buying in a certain way helps their local community, then they are allowed to put that decision process into place. What that means is if they can show that a large company paying tax is likely to help their local community by having more schools or more roads, better education, or whatever it might be that they're responsible for, then they can say that is bound to let them choose on the basis of which company pays tax or not. So I believe there is a counter-argument. The difficulty is we're going to have a bit of a legal process to go through potentially before we are certain that this can really work.
Well, let's hope that that does work. France is one of the countries that has managed to implement it quite successfully in terms of a kind of tax haven-free zone for procurement and public contracts locally.
Yes, indeed. So far, there hasn't been a legal challenge. We just have to hope. If this is possible, and if the law allows it in Helsinki, the law will allow it in Germany, the law will allow it in Italy, the law will allow it in the UK.
OK, let's talk about Starbucks now, because they've been brewing up a bit more than just coffee, haven't they?
Starbucks is very clearly a profitable operation in the UK. If it wasn't, they wouldn't be increasing the number of stores they've got from 735 now to over 1,000 over the next 3 years. Nobody invests that much in expanding a loss-making operation.
Well, they've been declaring a loss while they're also telling their investors how profitable their UK business is. So, great example of what's wrong with the system that we have that allows multinational companies to perfectly legally use accounting trickery in this way. It happens to be the UK arm of Starbucks, but it could be something that multinationals can apply in any country.
What they've done is strip those profits out of the UK, and they've done it in three ways, none of which they are denying. The first is they pay a royalty from the UK to another company within the Starbucks group. We don't know where, I guess it's in a tax haven, and they pay 6% of their total sales from the UK into this company that owns the right to the Starbucks name. Secondly, Starbucks in the UK buys its coffee beans from Starbucks in the Netherlands. The Netherlands has a lower tax rate from the UK. Rather oddly, that operation is again not terribly profitable for a coffee roasting company. Is that because the Dutch company buys its coffee beans from a Starbucks Swiss operation? Well, that's my speculation. We can't see the accounts of Starbucks in Switzerland, which is supplying these coffee beans. So we come back against another of our old-time obstacles. Secrecy is stopping us finding out what is going on here. The last of the three ways in which Starbucks takes profit out of the UK, most of the financing for the UK operation is provided by a loan from another company within Starbucks. Again, I'm not sure where, but I do know the interest rate paid is high. Why is Starbucks paying such a high interest rate? Frankly, it seems very odd. This is what is called thin capitalization. It's another form of transfer pricing arrangement, and it looks like Starbucks is stripping profit that way too. By the time it's applied these three techniques to its operation, mysteriously, that profit is no longer here when it comes to paying the tax authorities. So they don't pay tax.
And the reason why we don't really know exactly what they're doing where is because basically these multinational companies can kind of bundle up all their accounts into one and report in the country of choice, which would usually be the lowest tax country of choice.
Indeed, and they can do exactly what you've described there, Naomi, but worse than that, they can hide that that's what they're doing, because there is no requirement in Switzerland for a set of accounts to go on public records for Starbucks, so we simply don't know how much profit has been shifted into that country. Of course, if we had country-by-country reporting, something that we've long advocated, we would know what was going on.
Okay, and small companies, they're just not on a level playing field, are they? Because they're not able to employ the kind of high-level accountants and structures that are needed to create this kind of trickery in the first place. So it's a totally and utterly unequal situation for them.
Yeah. What it does is give us an example of a company where we can clearly boycott their product. Choose your local small cafe. They are suffering unfair competition from Starbucks, who are, as a result, being subsidised by the UK government to undermine UK businesses. Now, that's absurd.
Thank you, Richard. Economist Richard Murphy of Tax Research UK and author of the book The Courageous State. He'll be back next month. And now for the TaxCast special feature. Unfortunately, the world's full of corrupt politicians who steal from their own people. This month, the TaxCast looks at the highly profitable global system that sells the secrecy they need to get away with it. In 1986, the Filipino dictator Ferdinand Marcos was overthrown in the so-called People Power Revolution.
One low estimate, I would say, put the stolen wealth of the dictatorship, the money that was stashed away abroad in secret bank accounts and so on, as more than $11 billion. And we thought that was a low estimate.
Democracy and economic justice campaigner Liddy Nakpil of Jubilee South.
One of the things that we did as a people's movement against a dictator was campaign for the return of the money, filing cases abroad against the dictatorship. You know, there were some victories, a lot of frustrations, and I would say to this day, a large part of that stolen wealth is still not in the hands of the people. It's still somehow in control of the Marcoses and their friends.
Asset recovery specialist Jim Henry went to the Philippines to investigate the year after Marcos fell from power. The first economist before him to look at the accounting books was poisoned, went into a coma and took a month to recover.
How easy is it to recover that kind of money and return it to the Philippine state?
Imelda Marcos said herself, it's easy to take your money into Switzerland. It's almost impossible to get it out. And that's been the experience of the Philippine governments that have been in power since 1986. I think the total recovery they ever got from Switzerland was on the order of $560 million, which is a small fraction of all the wealthy and his cronies put there and then moved to other places like the United States or the UK, using Switzerland as a kind of conduit. But the problem that you face when you're doing asset recovery is, of course, the stuff is secret. It's hard to track and trace.
Liddy Nakpil again.
They did use a lot of dummy corporations.
Do you happen to know how much has been reclaimed for the Philippines from the Marcoses?
I don't think it would even reach $1 billion. It's very difficult to have a very exact amount because, unfortunately, there are also a lot of tales of corruption surrounding the Philippine Commission on Good Governance, which was the government agency that was formed to run after the money. So some more than that was actually returned but was lost because of corruption, because of payoffs or kickbacks or actual stealing of the stolen money by a new group of perpetrators. You know? So we don't really have a very good estimate.
And people re-stole that money because they could, because global offshore banking secrecy was there to facilitate it. Today, the Philippines is still paying off billions the Philippine Central Bank borrowed under Marcos, much of which he pocketed himself. Asset recovery specialist Jim Henry again.
I had a chance when I was in Manila last year to ask one of the ministers to Corazon Aquino, who took power after Marcos left power, why it was that the Philippine government didn't protest to the banks and say, you know, this is dirty money. Invoke the so-called odious debt doctrine, saying that it had all been incurred by a dictatorial government. The Philippines said basically New York banks, like Citibank, actually threatened the government with trade sanctions if they did that. Said, we'll cut off your loans. Quote, you will have immense suffering. Those were exact words at the time. And so to this day, the government has acknowledged those debts, continued servicing them, and never raised the issue of the dirty money.
And so corruption isn't just a problem in a developing country like the Philippines. banks, law firms and accountancy firms in wealthy countries like the US, Switzerland and the UK are also getting fat off a global tax haven system that's selling secrecy. Right now, a corrupt government official, a terrorist cell, a drug cartel or an unscrupulous corporation's using offshore jurisdictions and anonymous shell corporations for their illicit activities. But they should no longer be able to hide who really owns what. We need to know the true beneficial ownership of major assets. You've been listening to the TaxCast. We'll bring you more news and analysis next month.